people coming in and helping themselves to food. So, yeah, we've just taken some extra precautions. We're also going to sort of make sure that we've got investing in some planters or some such to make sure that people are directed to the reception desk first and sign in. At the moment, it's quite open on the floor, and so it's not a natural thing to necessarily go straight up to reception, and we're also improving the signage on this floor.
What started me wondering about that was that the senior management team seemed as likely as anyone else not to sign themselves in and out. And we care about them just as much as everyone else, I presume, for safety. And
we're not required to sign in and out because we're staff members with our own tags.
Yeah. So in that case, we don't know who's here is what I'm saying.
Councillors are required to sign in and out. No, we do have ways of knowing because we have a booking system for booking rooms. So if the senior management team are coming here to use this chamber, for example, or a meeting room, that's booked and tied to the meeting request.
So it isn't about who's in the building or not?
I'm not sure what you mean.
This is not the subject of talking around here, so I'll get to perhaps get to the book, talk to you directly about it, because it's not
absolutely.
It's boring. Other people witness, I would think. Any other questions about Councillor Noon?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. It was just the health and safety reporting and the one item that relates to what was recorded by a contractor, one incident recorded by a contractor, and I just wanted to understand that, was that... Did that relate to OIC's health and safety procedures, or did that relate to the contractor's health and safety procedures? So I was just trying to understand, and if it related to the contractor's health and safety procedures, because they're independent, I just wondered just how that was managed. I'm not sure who can answer that.
It was the contractor with the electric fence?
I believe that was before this reporting period, so I believe this one was a bee sting received by a contractor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Although we have in the past had a contractor who hit an electric fence, and our health and safety business partner of the time, so Rebecca's predecessor, led the investigation into that from the ORC perspective, and also supported the contractor's process through that. Yeah.
So it would be the responsibility of the overarching their employer in the situation, because
so
we have employed the contractor, so we would have to do the incident investigation or whatever. No, thank you. Cheers.
Do you have
So on your near miss and incidents category, the graph that you do, do you compare them against other similar organisations to say, well, actually, while any incident's not good, but how we compare against, or have I just not read it well enough?
So at this point we don't, and I guess what makes that slightly challenging is there isn't kind of a defined set of principles, like the definitions aren't consistent across businesses. So something that we might define as being environmental, another organisation might term that as something else, so you wouldn't necessarily be comparing apples with apples. We could seek feedback from our colleagues through things like the Health and Safety and Human Resources Special Interest Group, but it would be difficult to compare robustly.
Yes, so all regional councils as such aren't on the same template?
Everyone has different systems that they're working towards, different categorisations, and I think we'd also be relying on other organisations to release a lot of their data to us and sort of vice versa to share that information. But I guess, there's various other working groups that we are participating in, where we are networking with other councils and other organisations and private sector as well to discuss probably more globally trends and particular issues. So rather than sort of comparing everyone's data and incident reporting, on a more global level, we're able to compare the types of issues other people are experiencing.
Any further questions, comments?
We received the report.
Seconded by Councillor Wilson. All those in favour?
Aye.
All those against? Carried. 8B. point.
Thank you.
Thank you. 8.2. Anything you'd like to add to your report here?
Well, yeah, it's done by the legal team, so Peter Kelleher. Unfortunately, he's got another meeting, so he couldn't make this morning. But but legislative compliance, you can see they've been in the process of developing a legislative warrant of fitness to go through all the legislation that council operates under and reviewing our compliance against all of those pieces. It is a work in progress. This is the first time we've done various but legislative compliance reporting. This is the first time the warrant of fitness has come to this table. And I think it's quite a good summary of where we're at against all the legislation that council operates under and, you know, the particular staff who are responsible for those areas. So, yeah, take it as read, but just, you know, bearing in mind that there's this will evolve a bit more over time as it comes back to this table.
Excellent way forward, isn't it? I've got a question, which is, in the risk analysis that was done for, that we're getting to, and I don't know whether to raise it there or here, that we didn't have one wasn't described as a risk. You know, this is the answer to a question that I would have thought might have been in the risk analysis.
Probably a question for when we get to the risk one. Okay. But again, the risk reporting is a work in progress as well. And certainly, the fact that this was missing and being developed should be noted in as part of the risk in the risk report and part of the mitigations and actions that have come out of it.
Councillor Wilson.
I think it's a good overview. I'm sure there are possibly some technical breaches in there that but in theory they're all compliant, and I think it's great. I think the areas that we should be highlighting for the reader and for ourselves, those that we're not complying on or that needs works, and I think the use of, and we used it earlier in the yellow, green and red, because that concentrates our mind onto those things which we should be concentrating our concerns with. And obviously some of the legal compliance were quite obvious for us, given our other workload under the RMA. But I think, again, just adding that nuance of so where we're going to do that work.
So that's something to feed into NICS.
Yeah.
As we develop it.
Yeah. And that's great, and I'm happy to... I think it's just noting, wasn't it? Moving around at this is not working for me today well.
I'll move that this report is noted.
Oh, sorry, I did have one other question, and that's the transport one. And I appreciate it's contractors, but when it comes to wages reporting and the issues of adding shift work and things in for bus drivers, I don't think we're not putting bus drivers in here, are we? They're not considered as employees?
No.
I think the legal ramifications of some of the contractor employment stuff we should be having an overview of. I think it is a risk, and so I'm just wondering whether we need to add that in as a line item somewhere, because it certainly has a very big financial effect if we get that stuff wrong.
Maybe, yeah, it perhaps should be talked about on the risk.
Okay, and not legal. Okay.
Well, I'll take the comment back and talk to Peter Kelleher about it and whether it sits in here or that's something in the risk. One of the risks that we've got is around service delivery around contractors in particular, and whether that sort of sits in there and needs to be sort of fleshed out a bit in there to make sure that we're dealing with the risk. It's an actual legal obligation for us, because they're not our employees, that's what I'll just have to work out exactly where it sits.
Costing us $448,000, so I presume it is a legal requirement. Yeah.
It's whether it's our legal requirement, it's their legal requirement, but then it becomes a contract cost and issue for us, it's not our legal requirement under the Employment Act.
Apologies, I've
jumped
the gun on that one, obviously.
Any other questions, comments? I move that this report be noted.
Seconded.
All those in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
So, Nick, you're happy with the way that's coming together?
Oh, yeah, I'm really impressed with that. I think it's a great overview of where council operates and how we operate. And so as we develop this further and start getting this embedded into, you know, the staff responsible really over making sure that we're complying in each area, I think it'll be a really valuable tool for running the business.
Okay, that was... We'll just pretend you asked that just before we talk about whatever. Okay, moving on to 8.3, audit management letter response. Like to, this is not by you, Nick, but you know about it. You presumably have.
So every year, for those of you who have done audit and risk before, the auditors will turn up with and talk through the audit management letter where they raise any particular areas that they've got comment or recommendations that we should do. The one from last year had these four areas. This is the first meeting of audit and risk after the auditors have tabled their comments, then we respond back. So in each of those areas, we've just noted what we've done around all of those things. I'd note that we've either dealt with them or they're in progress. Probably the one that comes up every year is the fourth one on annual leave. Council has... an amount of annual leave that remains sort of fairly consistent, as most businesses do. So that one's always there. The others were specific to last year, and statement of service performance in particular, as we've done quite a lot of change around how we're working through that with the quarterly reports, which you see, and the other two, we've modified the policies around those. So. We think that we've responded to those, and not envisaging that the first three should come up again this year. Annual leave is.
What can we do about annual leave?
Well,
we work really hard on annual leave. Once a month, we look at the figures as part of an ELT, and we have a discussion about how we might reduce annual leave figures. It has been trending downwards since I arrived because we've put a real focus on it. But the reality is that at times it gets really difficult and we will get increases again. So, for example, in normal summers, and this hasn't really been a normal summer, but in normal summers when we do low flow work, the staff can't take annual leave, and then they also accrue a whole lot of what we call flexi time, which means they work extra hours and then they've got to take that time off. So there's this ongoing challenge with, they've got to take the flexi time or they lose it, so they don't take their annual leave. But what we do is at Christmas time, we always encourage people to take extra time. Of course, that wasn't possible for most of our policy and science staff this year, but normally we do that. We also encourage... and have leave plans for those people that have a significant issue. So if you've got more than a year's worth of entitlement, then usually we're encouraging people to take leave, and we would have a leave plan. Some of the leave balances reflect where we've had key person risk, where we quite simply, one example where we only had one person doing payroll, that meant they couldn't take time off effectively. We've now rectified that situation so that person can take time off. And we work with those individuals quite a lot. So we are very aware, and as I say, it's trending downwards. But I am a little concerned that we may see that start to trend upwards again, given the workload and the pace of work just right now.
But we've got a quantifiable figure on it, I presume, as in the books. Yeah.
So
yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Can I just make it is very hard to make. From the, I am continually told to take more leave. So, and you don't, just in some jobs, it just sort of, it just happens. But there is, you know, and we do exactly what he has. We have a plan that I have to reduce it. So the plan comes out, and you reduce it. but it's, then the work has to be done.
Yeah.
So it is an ongoing balance.
And the other thing that we have discussed, and I ask that we not do this for now, is there is the option available in law for us to pay people out bits of leave. I haven't done that yet, and I'm not that keen to do it because there are a number of risks that come with people not taking leave. Of course, there's risk for them in terms of health and mental well-being and all of those things, but there are also risks to the organisation. Best practice is that every person in an organisation has a couple of weeks a year off. And one of the reasons for that is because if there's anything fraudulent going on or not quite right, it's an opportunity to expose that. So it's not, you know, there's more than one reason about why you want people to have leave. So a proposal came to ELT to suggest perhaps that we did pay out some leave. But we've held that in abeyance for now.
Happy to move.
Seconded, Councillor Noon.
Seconded.
All those in favour say aye.
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 On the contrary, no.
Happy to move the next one as well. Go into
okay.
My public.
Seconded.
All those in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Right.
I'll move that we move out of non-public.
Close the meeting.
Yes, exactly.
Ditto.
And all those in favour?
Aye.
Right, we're out of public and I will now close the meeting.